What's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 84. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
Josh.
Wait.
Ethan?
Yeah.
Melissa.
Ethan's here. Melissa!
And joining us this week from Jonja.net, good friend of the site, Christopher Page.
Hey!
Hey, everybody!
Hey.
It's like, don't.
Wow, okay. So this week we are wrapping up our Joe Dante series with the John Goodman starring vehicle, the classic Matinee, It Shall Be a Good Time. But before we get that, let's get to talking about what we watched this week. I think I've got a whopping nothing. I've watched some Dexter, and that's about it. So, Barry, I'll let you kick it off.
Okay. Well, I saw David Zucker's An American Carol, which I thought was really lame and silly. Some really good ideas in there, but casting Kevin Farley I thought was definitely the kiss of death. He, you know, he's not even on the level of like John Belushi, Jim Belushi, and Kevin Farley was just a mistake. And the movie itself is a total wash. More embarrassing, I actually saw the Jonas Brothers concert experience, not in 3D. I got to say, it was one of the most appalling films. And I'll be completely upfront and say I did see the Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus, Best of Both Worlds concert movie last year.
You even went to see New Kids on the Block this week.
Why do you Why do you got to out me like that? Yes, I did. But my
Hannah Montana and a Jonas brother.
My sister-in-law won tickets, so she invited us. I did not pay a day to see these guys in concert.
I was actually just trying to set up some context for just how bad the Jonas Brothers was going to be.
Oh, okay, that's there all. You go. Okay. Like, great, credibility gone after 5 minutes. Anyway, the Jonas Brothers movie. The Hannah Montana movie, even if you hate Hannah Montana or can't stand her music, it was a very well-made concert movie. And it's what it's supposed to be. The concert footage was good. The backstage footage was interesting. With the Jonas Brothers, from the very first scene, they're trying to make the point. This is the movie's point, not my point. They're trying to make the point that the Jonas Brothers are up there with the Beatles.
Oh,
the Beatles.
My God.
The opening scene is meant to emulate A Hard Day's Night. And there's scenes throughout the movie where the Jonas Brothers are commenting about how people are commenting on them, comparing them to like the Beatles throughout the whole movie.
Did they say, no, 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 we're not, we suck?
Well, here's the thing. There's a scene in the movie that has widely been discussed where the Jonas Brothers get out these foam hoses. And they hose down these frantic, screaming, spastic 11-year-old girls with this white foam, and there are ample shots of this white, sticky goo getting stuck in their hair. This movie
was tagged for this.
This movie is very, very irresponsible. I mean, it's not really showing a phenomenon in terms of these guys with talent. It's showing these guys, they have the ability to get 12-year-old girls in like this ridiculous frenzy. It was very troubling, especially considering these guys are not talented. The best parts of the concert Yep.
I'm hot. You're cold. We're burning up, baby.
Yeah, that's in the movie. But I gotta say, like, when Taylor Swift, of all people, takes stage, that's when the movie is somewhat watchable. But beyond that, this is honestly one of the worst concert movies I've seen. If anything, just because it was so wrong-headed. I was kind of appalled that Disney would release a movie like this.
Well, get the bleep button ready.
Do you have it? I don't have it. Hang on, let me get it.
Sensor, standby.
Yeah, I will say that I wish this was a video cast right now, because watching the look of shock and dumbfoundedness on Melissa's face right now is just absolutely a hilarious thing to behold. And yes, I am stalling until I can get the bleep button.
Are you going to mention the South Park episode?
Yeah,
Josh? Yeah, of course. You got it. Because okay. They were right on.
Disney released it because Christians are fucking retarded.
Wow. All right, then.
What are parents really going to say when your 12-year-old girl comes home and says, well, the Jonas Brothers sprayed me with white sticky foam tonight? Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
they're just preparing them for later in life.
Well, Disney shouldn't be responsible for that.
Yeah, it's an appalling movie. It really is. I can see why it flopped. Everyone's like, I don't understand why the Jonas Brothers movies flopped. Because it was terrible. It was awful.
Well, I remember watching, like, the Backstreet Boys concert videos and all the Britney Spears stuff, all the stuff that they did. I don't know if they necessarily did it through Disney. I know they did Backstreet Boys through Disney. And, well, yeah, I guess Britney too. And those were awesome. I mean, even if you don't appreciate their music, they were done well, and that sounds like a train wreck.
It's good that you mentioned, Dave, I guess, that I saw New Kids on the Block, because for Pete's sake, the New Kids concert, the Backstreet Boys concert, like all that stuff. I mean, they're, you know, pop music is always going to be, you know, the junk food of great music. But, you know, great junk food is great junk food. The Jonas Brothers are like a two-day-year-old cheeseburger. I mean, they're just – they're terrible. Terrible.
So, Chris, did you want to chime in on this at all? I'm guessing you have some thoughts as well. No, I didn't
just
want to.
Thinking, I'm happy that history will, in the end – I mean, 40 years from now – I doubt anyone will know or remember the Jonas Brothers.
Yes.
Unlike the Beatles.
They can compare themselves to the Beatles or whoever they want, all they want. But 40 years from now, no one will be clamoring for the re-release of the Jonas Brothers album.
I think they will be remembered like the Beatles, like the Insect, 40 years from now.
Wow, okay then.
They'll be remembered like the Monkees.
Oh, really?
Dude.
I think that's an insult to the Monkees.
Yeah, you gotta bring the Monkees into this.
So what else did you see?
Let's see. I watched, because it turned 10 years old this week, I went back and watched Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. Still one of my favorite movies. Holds up very well. A movie that it's Kubrick with a Spielberg chaser, AI. Not one of Dave's favorites, but I really like this film. And watched JCVD, which is even better the second time. I can't recommend that movie higher enough. I love that movie.
I still need to see it the first time, and I've got the DVD. That's the sad part of it.
Oh, you got to see it. You got to see it.
I know.
It's great.
All right, Chris, why don't you go ahead and go next, sir? What did you watch this, however long you'd like to go back?
Yeah, I kind of flubbed a little bit since I've never been on. I figured I could, you know, just what I've seen recently instead of just this week.
Absolutely.
I have been watching, been watching a little bit of the Syfy channel, sci-fi Syfy.
The Syphilis channel, yes.
Yeah, apparently that actually in like Polish SYFY means pox. I think that's real. I've been watching the new Warehouse 13.
Is that good? I've been hearing a lot about it.
Well, it's a little bit. I've also been watching Eureka, which is also both along the same lines. I mean, neither one, you know, raises the bar or expectations on anybody else in their television shows, but they're just fun. You know, you can sit back for an hour, you have a good time. The writing's good, the chemistry's good, the acting's nice. So it's been that's been fun. So right. I think it's fine. It's been ratings have been really good for the past 2 weeks. So
now, for those who aren't familiar with it, what is Warehouse 13?
Warehouse 13, that's the new show on Sci-Fi Channel. It essentially, think like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they see the Ark being packed away in a giant warehouse. It's a little mix of that and Friday the 13th, the series.
Oh, that sounds great.
So, yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun. I meant to have the stars of the show written down in front of me, but I don't, so look it up. But it's really I've enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun.
Cool. Right on.
I've also been going back, kind of been dusting off some DVDs. I've been watching Space Above and Beyond, the complete series, meaning the one and only season.
It's kind of like Bionic Woman, the entire series. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But, how's it hold up?
Story. I think it still holds up fine. Obviously, the visuals are a little dated. I mean, you're talking about, this was, 90s, 10 years ago, and CGI on television. So it's a little bit like watching the space battles is a little bit like watching an old Atari game. And yeah. Everything breaks apart in very, you know, precise pieces and stuff. But story-wise and everything, I still think it holds up. I mean, you still kind of, it pulls you in, you know, when the characters have their big moments, you still feel it if you're into it. So, I've been enjoying it.
Right on.
Ooh, the big thing I've watched just the other week, I went and saw the movie Moon. Has anyone else seen this?
Yes,
I've seen it.
Yeah, what'd you guys think of it? I really liked it.
You go ahead, Ethan.
Yeah, I thought it was really impressive, especially Sam Rockwell's performance. I thought kept me emotionally engaged throughout the entire movie.
Yeah. Yeah, he was impressive. I mean, they did it old school as far as, I mean, he's acted against himself, you know, in, 95% of the film.
Yeah.
And they did it old school where it's pretty much just him doing the scene and then him doing the scene again on the other side. I thought it was impressive.
What do you think, Barry?
I thought Rockwell's performance is one of the most remarkable of the year. I would put it up there with Jeremy Irons and David Cronenberg's Dead Ringers. I mean, really incredible. You really forget you're watching two different... You know, you forget you're watching the same actor playing two different people. Or is he? I thought the movie was so overwhelmingly bleak and depressing. I left the theater feeling very, very down. I don't know. But the film definitely is haunting, and it definitely has stayed with me. But I don't know if I'd say I'd enjoyed it, just because it is so much about this guy's physical and psychological torment throughout the whole movie.
Sorry, there's something I wanted to bring up. I really like the movie, but one thing that annoyed me was the final line of the movie.
Hmm.
I think that it was just a little too, like, oh, really? Come on.
A little too neat?
Yeah, it edited on kind of the wrong note, I found.
Hmm.
Which part exactly? What?
Do you mean like the voiceover, like that they're playing at the end?
Yeah, the voice of the guy would be like, right. I'll just say the line contains the word immigrant in it.
Right.
No, I think this movie, I would have loved to have seen, not necessarily be the movie longer, but it would have been nice to see a sort of like an epilogue, you know, in some form, online, a comic book, just something to sort of kind of tie the story up better than what actually happened.
Well, I know that Duncan Jones, he's doing this thing with all his movies from now on where they're all going to be set in the same universe, so I think that Sam Bell is going to have a cameo in his next movie.
Interesting.
Oh, okay. That would be cool.
That's cool.
No, it was a... I think I said about it was a big screen movie done on a... or a big major motion picture done on the, you know, the independent level, and it was really impressive.
Yeah, definitely some of the most impressive effects, considering they're so persuasive, but they were so low-key.
Yeah, very. Not in your face. It was just there. I really expected a one room, psychological thriller, and I was really surprised how much outside and the sets were enormous. I thought.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, very impressive film debut.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more from this Duncan Jones. This was his first big film, so I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Yes. Good for Zoe Bowie.
Zoe Bowie, yeah.
Cool. Do you have anything else, sir?
No, that's it. That'll do it.
All right, cool. I'll let Melissa and Josh go next, and we'll wrap it up with you then.
All right. Well, we both saw Ghostbusters 2 and Eurotrip.
What'd you think of Ghostbusters 2?
I thought it was so stupid.
Thank you.
I mean,
that's Bobby Brown song.
I understand.
It's so slow.
Yeah, it was like. Nothing happened. Why did they just change? I mean, I understand it's 5 years later. In real time, 5 years, I guess.
Yeah.
But they just didn't really give you any background information. And I was actually really disturbed by the opening scene where her baby in the carriage is rolling down the street. I was like, oh my God, Ghostbusters 2. It's like, that's how you're going to open this? And I just didn't really like that.
Well, I think it's interesting to note that Gremlins 1 and 2 are the same.
Same years as Ghostbusters 1 and 2.
They both came out the same years. I think looking at Gremlins 2 and just like how much better of a sequel that is compared to Crapbusters 2.
Mm-hmm.
What were you saying, Chris?
I still am a big fan of Ghostbusters. I still mark it up as probably one of my favorite films of all time. And when Ghostbusters 2 came out, I just, talk about it, just, they could have just put me against the wall and started punching. it hurt.
You know, I think any episode of the real Ghostbusters was better than actually Ghostbusters 2.
Yes. Yeah.
That's, you know, having recently revisited the real Ghostbusters, that's really not saying a whole heck of a lot.
Well, and like the villain was dumb, and the whole ending where they
was it Viggo the Carpathian?
Yeah,
it was really
and the
silly.
Painting yeah, and like sweet. Just what
they
the
gave
hell?
Peter McNichol way too much time as the possessed museum curator. Yeah.
Well, and Slimer was like a good guy.
Yeah.
Well, this was also after the cartoon, so
mm-hmm. That's right. And the whole thing with the Statue of Liberty, which is they were trying too hard to top Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, they couldn't.
Yeah.
Off topic. Did Bobby Brown really release a song called Humping Around?
Humping Around.
Yeah.
Humping.
Ain't nobody humping around.
Yeah. H-U-M-P-I-N apostrophe humping around. Yes.
Can we make that our show intro?
I don't think so. No, I'm good.
I have the album, Dave.
Oh, then we also watch Euro Trip, and
with Matt Damon.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's guilty pleasure. I think it's funny.
Yeah, it
is what it is.
I don't remember the last time I saw that either. I mean, I've always enjoyed that, but I just realized how kind of like low budget it seemed, yeah. And I didn't realize that before.
Don't you think Road Trip was better though than Euro Trip?
I never saw that.
Oh, you gotta see Road Trip.
What? American classic.
Yes, good movie.
Really? American classic?
With Tom Green in it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only good movie Tom Green did.
No, Freddy Got Fingered.
Sorry, you're on your own, buddy.
Have you seen that?
Have I? Yes. Yeah. The first year I taught film classes, I was like, all these young guys, I'm like, well, let's talk about like Billy Wilder. Like, have you seen Freddy Got Fingered? That's a great movie.
Like, that is a good movie. That's a good movie.
Okay.
And I also saw Teen Wolf.
Yes.
I was actually babysitting a group of children aged 4 to 8, and I couldn't believe that this movie was in their children's DVD collection of things they could pick
from. Did you notice the guy with the cock out at the end during the basketball game, or no?
No. I mean, I watched it, but I was... from afar.
You weren't looking for that?
No, I was not. But yeah, I had to try and get the kids to stop saying dick nose. So that was really not fun.
Ethan, are you serious? Does a guy have his thing hanging out in one scene?
Yeah, he does. It's like, look it up.
Do I want to?
I'm sure, no, it's like blurry in a crowd shot. But yeah, did they edit it out of the DVD release?
I don't know, but... Man,
I hope
that's
so.
80s, man. Everyone was on coke that day.
I like Teen Wolf. And that cartoon, speaking of cartoon spinoffs, that was my favorite cartoon show as a kid.
There is a Teen Wolf cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
I have a few episodes on the VHS if you want to see it.
It's,
yeah,
it's like a whole Teen Wolf family. Yeah. Everyone turns into werewolves.
Oh, and they did a sequel with Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Oh, Jason Bateman's in it?
Yeah, Teen Wolf 2. Yeah, he's the cousin, Todd Howard. He's the cousin of Scott Howard.
Wow. Jason Bateman's from Arrested Development, right?
Yeah, the
Michael
Jason
Bluth.
Bateman.
This is before he became the Jason Bateman that you know.
Yeah, this was his first starring role.
This and is his, back in, Valerie Day?
That's right, yeah, very good. Valerie's family, the Hogan family, yeah.
All righty. And,
enough about Teen Wolf!
I assume we're going to talk about Harry Potter later.
Yeah, we will.
Later.
Okay. We will.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then.
Okay, there's two things I watched this week that just blew me away.
I'm scared.
First one, I'm not being ironic here. Okay,
I'm still scared.
I finally saw the HBO miniseries Angels in America, by Mike Nichols.
Wonderful. Yes.
That's an amazing movie.
Yeah.
Movies.
Sure.
Yeah, I thought it was like the best thing I've ever seen, like from television, to be honest.
Sure.
Though it's like it takes a while to kind of get used to it because it's so bizarre. Like the opening scene, because a lot of the actors play multiple roles, and the opening scene is Meryl Streep playing a rabbi.
Yeah.
Like she has like a big beard on and she's speaking in Yiddish. I'm like, what the fuck is this? But eventually I got used to it, and by the end I really saw the meaning of it all. And to me, this movie kind of said everything I think both Religulous and Dogma wanted to say.
Sure.
But in a much better way. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, Ethan, what did your tweet say about that? Didn't you...
Or you wanted to play something.
Yeah, you wanted to sing a song?
Wait, no, let me just get this.
You're getting there, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just get my tunes up, okay.
Oh, no.
Okay. Did you hear that?
No.
Yeah, it totally blasted out, so I'll find it on YouTube and put it back in.
Anyway, yeah, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to kind of cheapen the show by...
By doing Everyone Has AIDS? Okay.
Yeah, it's a really impressive show. The other thing I watched that really blew me away was Woodstock. I guess that ties into the Jonas Brothers.
Were they there?
That reminds me. I didn't get to do the show last week. There was something I wanted, something I watched last week that kind of ties in. But I watched the Omega Man last week.
Oh yeah.
And there's a scene in the movie where Charlton Heston, he goes to a movie theater and he watches Woodstock. I'm thinking, like, what is, like, this right-wing icon doing watching a movie about hippies? Like, he figured he'd, like, pull out his gun and be like, ah, goddamn hippies, and, like, shoot the screen or something.
Wow.
But, yeah.
You would have thought there had been another theater somewhere in New York or L.A. I forget where he was.
I think it was New York.
Yeah, I think it was New York, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was like that. Watching that movie is like a transcendent experience, pretty much. It's pretty amazing. Like, just when they're anytime there's a musician playing, I was just totally rocking out. And just like when they're showing when it rained like crazy, and they're all sliding in the mud, and they're all like making this big chant. It's like amazing. And though something I was thinking. If you're at Woodstock, can you imagine what a nightmare it would be to go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
Because there's like a million people there, and the porta potties are like the very back. So you'd have to like go through a million people just to get to that. Like, can you imagine how many people probably just like dumped or pissed right where they were sitting?
I was gonna say, that may have not been mud.
Ah, well played. Ah.
Okay, I guess enough about that. I revisited the Blair Witch project.
What'd you think?
I remember I first saw that movie when I was pretty young. I saw it at a drive-in.
Oh, wow.
As a double bill with Detroit Rock City, I remember.
Weird.
That's a weird one.
That's a
And I at a young age, I just was not very impressed with it. I found it very boring, I remember. But watching it now... Man, that movie is scary.
I think that movie's like, terrifying. Seriously.
Yeah, like the scene where they're in the tent and there's like the children crying and the tent is like rumbling. Like that's like probably one of the scariest scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
And like when she finds his fingers outside her.
Oh yeah, and the final scene in the movie too. Holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Have you guys seen the Empire magazine, look back? No, excuse me, Rue Morgue. I'm sorry, Rue Morgue, the horror magazine. Their look back on Blair Witch. Mm-hmm. They showed clips of the two alternate endings that they shot. And this is a mild spoiler. I can't remember. Do you remember, Ethan, the name of the guy who's in the corner at the end of the movie in the last scene?
Josh.
It is Josh? Okay. The alternate shots that they did, because the studio asked, like, would you guys mind, like, juicing up your ending? They did one where they find him hanging. He's, like, literally on a noose, like, hanging back and forth, and Heather screams, and the movie turns to black. And the other one they did, really crazy, it looks like something out of Children of the Corn. He's crucified on one of those Blair Witch... sticks that are like really, really big. There's like a huge Blair Witch stick crucifix in the basement, and he's like hung on it, and he's dead. I mean, you know, and they actually showed these three frames, you know, the two alternate endings they didn't use with the one they did use, and by far the creepiest one is the one that they use, because it implies so much, but you kind of have to fill in the blanks.
Well, I think it's just so good because the movie's just creates its own mythology behind all that, and it's just like so interesting.
Scary. As opposed to Book of Shadows?
That's awful.
I feel like I should watch that. No.
You should. If I ever teach a movie class on sequels, and I'd love to, that would be one I would show back to back, because it's interesting to see how they did the Blair Witch Project, and then they did a sequel that really, I think, the filmmakers thought, this is what American audiences really want.
I know the guy who directed that. He's like a acclaimed documentary.
Yeah, Joe Berlinger, director, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and I think I read that like he made a more kind of cerebral movie, but then the studio's like, oh no, let's throw this in here and this in here and this. So that is like the case of, you were saying, the alternate ending, where no, just the more cerebral, simple thing is what's scarier.
Yeah. No, yeah, I would recommend seeing Book of Shadows. There are some really interesting ideas in the movie, but you know the movie's in trouble when it opens up with documentary footage and you're like, oh, this is going to be in the same style. Then all of a sudden, the Marilyn Manson song blares and there's like this huge crane shot over the forest. Like, oh, okay, they spent millions of dollars on this movie. Yeah, not a great movie.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Is that it for you, Ethan?
I watched Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, yes.
I'd actually never seen that before, and I was surprised that Alec Baldwin actually had only one scene in the movie.
It's arguably the best thing he's ever done.
Yeah. But
did you learn any new and inventive uses of the F word after seeing that film? I know I did.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty good with it already. But I was just thinking, if that was ever done as a high school play, obviously the language would be a bit of a problem. But also just thinking how there's that scene where Alec Baldwin, he's like, he's doing his thing, and he goes to Jack Lemmon and stuff, and he's yelling at him, and there's already that contrast, you know, of seeing Jack Lemmon, this old guy, and Alec Baldwin, this young guy. But that would be totally lost when you have like two 16-year-olds doing that.
Fair enough. You know, I did watch one thing that I totally spaced. We're watching From the Earth to the Moon, and we didn't plan this, I promise, but it just so happened we watched the episode where they land on the moon on the anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing, which was kind of cool for like the historical context thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, very cool stuff. So, okay, let's go ahead and talk about what hit theaters this week, because good night, we're talking a lot.
Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince opened on Wednesday and is currently ruling the box office. Coming up very soon in limited release, 500 Days of Summer with Zooey Deschanel and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Finally.
Yes.
Wait, you guys saw that. What did you think?
We can't talk about it yet.
We still can't talk about it.
We have to wait until next week when it releases in Denver, which is really annoying.
Wait, did like the studio told you that?
Okay. No. We talk about it right now? Yes. Have we been asked not to? Yes. When you have applications in with certain press agencies, it's good to follow said requests. So
okay, I just thought you were thinking they wanted that.
Oh no, they do.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah, that's where we are with that. It's kind of odd. So we'll be talking about it next week. But I will say both theatrical releases are well worth checking out, and that's all that's worth saying right now. So Harry Potter, did you see this too, Chris?
I have not.
Okay.
Nope.
It's all good. All right.
Spoiler alert: there's magic.
Yeah. Dumbledore kills Draco. There we go. I'll just make something up. Because someone
kids point each other with sticks and talking in tongue, right?
Yeah. There you go. Exactly. So who here has read the books?
Me.
Okay. So we got two people who have read the books.
And two people haven't. So be good.
Yes. And you didn't see it, right, Josh?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
It's all good. All right. I'm going to let y'all who have read the books go first. So, Melissa, why don't you lead us off?
Okay. Let me yawn first. Okay.
That's a great sign. I'm just saying.
I'm tired. I don't remember when the release of this book was.
I think it was 2005.
Okay. So that's been a while. And I mean, I'm sure I read it real fast. I liked all the books. So I wasn't real up to date on this because I haven't read it, you know, within the last year or anything, but I just felt, I don't want to say I felt like it was slow, but I felt like it takes a lot of time to move through the sequences of the book in accordance on screen. And so I guess if you didn't have interest in this, or for you that haven't read the book, maybe it would seem slow, but I don't know. There's another word I want to use for it. It wasn't slow, but it was just taking its time.
Mediative?
Yeah.
Plotting?
I don't know, but I just felt like there wasn't enough explanation on screen, and I felt it was a little lacking in just information. And maybe for super fans or people that are a little more familiar or recent readers would pick up on all the little things that could have been in the film, but I didn't recognize any like little subtle, it just seemed lacking. I don't know how else to describe it. But and I absolutely don't want to compare it to Twilight, but I just felt like tones of the film felt a little just empty, like Twilight felt empty, but not nearly on the same level. So, which is saying a lot considering this is a Harry Potter film, and I think the rest of the films are brilliant and very exciting. But, and I felt like the build up to the climax of the film just was a little bit of a letdown for me.
Okay. So you were disappointed? did you not like it, or were you just kind of disappointed?
I was just disappointed because, I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but you guys know what I'm talking about, and the big scene with Dumbledore, and it just, that scene was so quick, and it took so long to get to that point, and it just didn't seem to have the turnout I was expecting, I guess. I don't know, but, I mean, I liked it. It wasn't... Definitely was not one of the best films, I don't think. And I felt like it was really just a big teaser for the next films. It's like, okay, so nothing really happened. Moving on. I don't know.
Fair enough, fair enough. Ethan, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit like Melissa here in that I read the books, but I'm not really a quote-unquote Potterphile.
Oh, yeah, like, I'm not even...
I really need the movies to remind me what actually happened in the books. Like, usually whenever, yeah, I see the movies, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's who that person is. They just kind of lightly remind me. But, yeah, I actually thought this movie was pretty great, and I appreciated that it's the most character-driven of all the movies so far, and it's the most kind of romantic comedy of the series so far, because basically, you know, in the next two, I guess, you know, it's going to get pretty dark, you know? So let's just take a moment to, you know, have some fun and appreciate our characters, you know, and see them grow a bit. I like that a lot. And I do think the actual narrative, what the half-blood prince is, kind of does suffer. Like, I really thought Prince should have had more development. He at least should have performed Little Red Corvette, but... yeah, though, actually...
But I'm back.
I want to bring up something about this movie. I don't think kids are going to get a lot from it because I saw it at 4:20 yesterday, and it was a mostly adult audience, but there was a few kidlets in there, and they were clearly not enjoying it because there was like a kid who was going during multiple points of the movie, and another kid was going beep beep pop 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 beep beep pop pop pop. So they clearly were not enjoying the romantic. They clearly were not enjoying the romantic shenanigans going on at Hogwarts. But yeah, but I appreciate that in a lot of ways. That I think I really enjoyed the performances in this one, particularly Jim Broadbent. I thought he was awesome in this, and the kid who played Malfoy was really good in this too.
Mm-hmm.
When I found in all the other movies, he was just like, "You've got a crappy broom, Potter." But, he actually showed a lot of depth, I thought, in this one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was impressed.
That's interesting. If I can,
that's a really good impression, by the way. Yeah.
If I can jump back in, it's interesting what you said about your audience, because the audience I watched it with, I mean, I didn't see this giant group of girls that was on the opposite side of the theater of me, but they were just in hysterics. And I mean, I would say they were probably like 15 to 18 range. They weren't like kids, but they were obviously like maybe super fans wearing, you know, the little scar on their forehead kind of thing came to the movie. And they thought it was really funny, and all the romantic stuff, I think, but it was girls, so maybe boys aren't going to appreciate that. I don't know. But the audience I saw it with was generally older. I didn't see any, like, 7-year-olds. So, yeah, I don't think kids will really get much out of this either. But I felt like this movie was going to be so much darker, and it really was very funny. And it was like, oh, we're laughing at all this. Oh, everything's so light. Even though the premise of the movie is very dark, but there was a lot of comedic breakthrough. And... Ethan, what you said about character development, you know, it really does focus on the characters, but I felt like the film was trying to not tell you everything about the characters because there's already been 5 movies, you should already know all this, and they didn't want to reintroduce people. But Ron's girlfriend, Lavender, they didn't say her name until whatever happens with their relationship. What are you guys looking at on the pen?
You're caught. You're busted.
I just noted that I brought my fireproof the movie pen with me, and it has the website and the logo, and in theaters 92608 on it. So sorry.
Does it have like a, does it have like a passage from the Bible on it?
No, no, it doesn't. That's like the only sign of restraint. And it is flaming orange, just in case you don't get the point of what kind of movie it is. So, sorry.
Wow, Melissa. Wow, that was just...
That's okay.
Wow.
I was so shocked I brought my pen with me.
But anyway, did you pick up on that, Ethan, that Ron's girlfriend, Lavender, was never introduced... From what I remember, she was never introduced as Lavender. I never... There's a scene where she... makes some glass foggy with her breath and draws like a little heart and puts R plus L. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what does that stand for? What is her name? They never said her name in the movie. And I was really pissed about that because.
Well, I guess I was eating Sour Patch Kids. So I guess I thought, oh, they were saying her name while I was digging in my bag or something. So.
Maybe they did say her name, but
no,
I didn't catch it.
Frankly, I didn't care.
I know, but I just thought...
Yeah, same here. It was kind of just like, oh, well.
Whatever. I know she's not a major character, but since she's not a major character, I thought it would do justice to her to at least tell me what her name was.
Yeah, I liked her performance. I wanted to find out what her name was so I can mention her in my review, but at the end of the movie, I'm like, who was that? So I just blew it off.
Lost.
Yeah.
And then... Well, go ahead.
I think this movie really kind of should have been retitled Harry Potter and the Raging Hormones, but...
Yeah, I felt like a lot of the focus being on relationships was a little corny.
Very fair, yeah.
And from what I remember in the book, I felt like the plot of Harry getting the Horcruxes.
The what?
Don't ask.
Don't worry, you haven't watched the movie, it doesn't matter.
I felt like that plot came a lot sooner and that like about half of the book was focused on
actually,
that.
That's one thing I remember about the book. It was pretty poorly developed in the book, too. Like, it didn't come until very late.
Then that's maybe... Maybe I'm confusing it with the seventh book, then. I don't know. But
yeah, same thing.
Yeah, same thing. But and then something else that just is random that I thought was odd was that Harry's wearing brown Converse in every scene of the movie. Why? Like,
oh,
I don't know.
No.
I just... It was weird because they were very casually dressed, and I guess it has to do with, you know, their supposed economic crisis. And also, when I was watching it, I felt... Like, this was an interesting time to release this movie with our economic downfalls, and that it kind of related in the movie. I felt a huge mirror with that. And I also, Barry, I'm going to target you with this, felt it was, I mean, it's sort of not really a Jesus parable or a religious parable, but I felt some, you could drag some religious undertones from it with Harry carrying out...
Destiny, yeah, and
yeah,
prophecy.
Exactly,
yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
And I really felt like that strongly, and I never have really felt that on my own without someone telling me, well, this is what this film is, or something like that. So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's good stuff. And
shall us new guys get into it now?
Well, you know, I was going to throw it. Did you guys notice? Like, I didn't even notice till it was over that somebody pointed out to me, like, oh, yeah, that's a lot of drinking in this movie because that is the legal age for these kids to drink. Mm-hmm. But that's why Harry and Ron and Hermione are like slapping them down, slapping them down
they
throughout the movie.
They were drinking butter beer.
But that is, they are of legal age in Europe.
But, and they do show that scene where they're coming from. Whatever, what's the town called that they always visit throughout the school year?
Hogsmeade.
Yeah, Hogsmeade. Ah. And they're both, Hermione's around both of them and she's like, oh, right. Like walking through. Yeah, well, so.
I did, I love the scene where Harry's like kind of stoned. That was pretty funny.
What scene?
Harry or Ron?
No, it's Harry, you know, when he was taking the potion and he was hanging out with Slughorn and there's that the like spider funeral.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell, they smoke pot?
No, they don't.
You missed out, Josh.
You have to see the movie. So as people who have not read the books, I thought this was a damn fine film. I had no problem. You know, it's interesting because my wife has read all the books, and she brought a friend who has read all the books. And as soon as the lights came up, it was, you know,
like,
there's... No, it wasn't. No, that was Prisoner of Azkaban. There was a lot of discussion about what was missing from the film. Mm-hmm. And as a person who's read books that have been adapted, I can understand that completely. For me, I didn't feel like I was missing a darn thing, really. So it was a lot of fun. My only problem with it is that this is totally the Empire Strikes Back of Harry Potter. I mean, you have the tragic thing that happens at the end, followed up by we're getting ready to go on a huge mission. I mean, you can't get much more taken straight out of the book. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we've got two movies ahead of us instead of one. So it's kind of a tease, I thought.
So, yeah.
But other than that, I thought Alan Rickman was phenomenal in this movie. He needs more screen time in these Harry Potter movies, I think.
I'd go with Michael Gambon. I thought a very commanding performance as Dumbledore. My problem with all of these Harry Potter movies, it's funny, like, you know, all the complaints about all the stuff they left out. I always feel like, really? They left stuff out? These movies are 2.5 hours. I thought this movie, like all the Potter movies, was at least 15, 20 minutes too long. Mm-hmm. And like I was telling you, Dave, like when it was over, there was so much in the movie. Like I forgot there was a Quidditch match and a great scene. And the opening scene, which is really incredible. I mean, it's like something out of a Roland Emmerich movie. It's like this really spectacular opening scene. But so much goes on. It's easy to forget it's even there. There's so much in this movie. It's like I wish that there were, you know, the ultimate DVD extended cuts, like what Peter Jackson did with the Lord of Rings films, because I feel that even though there might be stuff that's, you know, that's left out or too much stuff put in, I feel like the movie could still be streamlined as a film to be just a little tighter so that these incredibly eventful sequences don't feel like throwaway moments, because there's so many great moments in the movie. I mean, there's a scene where the little thing, do you remember the scene on the cake where the little cake topper is like skating around the cake? It's a wonderful I'm sure an expensive visual effect. It's wonderful and spectacular. You see it for like 1 second, and then it's gone. It's like there's so much in the movie where I feel like, no, let's not rush through so much of this.
Well, that reminds me about Deathly Hallows, the next one. I really hope each part isn't like 3 hours long each. It's like, don't be Angels in America. Don't be 6 hours long. Do like two-hour movies. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
But you just know they're going to like make it like,
I will say one – here's the thing. This is not a perfect movie by a long shot, absolutely. This is absolutely – I agree with you. This is like a huge romantic comedy for kids. You know, I can see why kids wouldn't be entertained by this, because even Rowling has come out and said it. As the books move along, they're more meant for an older and older audience. Now we have stupid people out there who are just like, oh, Harry Potter, I won't take my kids to that, and not really think about, hey, is this appropriate for my child? Mm-hmm. But it, you know, there are little things that kind of bug me. Like in, we watched Order of the Phoenix the night before we watched this movie. Yeah, well, we were thinking about doing them all, and we're like, no.
They were doing that down at Chapel Hills.
They were showing all of them.
All of them. Yeah.
Oh heck no. but you had the part at the beginning where they have the carriages. You know, they're going on the carriages and they have the creatures pulling them along. And what are these? Well, they're pulling them like they do every year when we come here. Yeah, this is the fifth movie and I had never seen them before, so they change continuity all the time throughout the movies.
Yeah,
it's just kind of annoying.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, overall I dug it. I really enjoyed it.
I didn't bring this up in my initial kind of blurb, but I actually did really appreciate also how they didn't need to resort to a big showdown at the end.
Like,
they just let what the big event was revolving around Dumbledore happen, and not just where in the book I remember it was like a big event, like a sequence where like there's like all this crazy wizard battles going on. But I like the fact they just didn't do that. Like, it would have been anticlimactic and dull and drag the movie out even longer, and they just kept it on the drama. I like that.
Well, yeah, go ahead. Maybe I think every movie has really been like, here you go with the characters, and then here's the climactic event, and here's the falling action, and someone always ends up at the hospital at the end. And this, even though that is basically the plot of this movie too, it wasn't as detailed as the rest of the movies. Maybe that's why I was disappointed, because I was just expecting that big peak with a bunch of wizard fighting stuff. And the other thing I was going to say is, you know, you're talking about what's missing from the book, the fans talking about that. I think being a reader, it's not necessarily that they needed to put more information in this, because they can't possibly make it any longer. But it's just that I think fans are either disappointed or disagree with what they ended up focusing the movie on. Because there are plenty of romantic undertones in the book, and that's a big focus of the book, but it's sprinkled throughout, and it just felt like the big chunk of this movie was all like, oh, girls, romance, da, 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 like, and maybe if they just would have did bits and pieces and focused more on Snape, that would have been really interesting, and I don't know.
I loved all the scenes of young Voldemort. I thought they were incredibly creepy, and I loved, let's see, one of the kids was Ralph Fiennes' son, his nephew, I'm sorry, Hero Fiennes, Tiffin. I thought he was fantastic. I thought all those scenes were so creepy. They made up for the fact that the movie wasn't as darker as some of the other entries. I liked the ending of the movie. I know Dave and I talked about earlier how he felt it was kind of a Back to the Future Part 2 ending, which is completely justified. But I liked it. You know, honestly, when it was over, this is the first time since The Prisoner of Azkaban that I'm really looking forward to the next Potter movie. And this is the first time since that movie that I was completely engaged in this world and these characters. It's not only does it allude to Empire Strikes Back, it even ends, the last image is all three of them, like silhouetted, looking out at the distance. Yeah, I mean, it's right at Empire Strikes Back. But yeah, I really dug that about this movie. I thought it was great.
Ethan, do you have any last comment before we wrap this up? Because we need to move on.
I want to marry Luna Lovegood.
Dude, she was awesome.
I want that dress she wears.
I will say, finally, you were talking about the Half-Blood Prince. I guess I could see them talking more about the identity of said Half-Blood Prince. But I kind of appreciated the way that they dropped the identity out of nowhere, because as soon as it happened, I'm like, oh, that makes complete and perfect sense.
Yeah,
and I think part of the book was like that, but there was a lot more evidence of who is the Half-Blood Prince throughout the beginning sequences of the book.
But they gave you all the information you needed just in the initial stuff, so I appreciated that. But okay. What hit DVD this week, sir? Because good night, we got to get moving.
This week we've got Bundy, Legacy of Evil. Again, not Al Bundy, Ted Bundy. I love that joke. Coraline, the great film by Henry Selick.
Apparently you can get some 3D glasses with it.
That's right. Who knows if they're any good, though. Yeah. It's got to be digital. It's got to be in theaters. Messengers to the Scarecrow, the R-rated Kirsten Dunst-less sequel. Not Kirsten Dunst. Kristen Stewart. I get them all mixed up. Kristen Stewart is not in Messengers 2, but she's in Twilight 2. Watchmen, Zack Snyder's controversial $100 million pseudo-hit, is available in various every edition you could possibly want.
Are you going to mention the director's cut?
The director's cut.
Because I've seen
cut,
that.
The theatrical cut, the Hell Ship cut, the...
And then
the no penis
the
cut.
The Rorschach cut.
It's supposed to be like 26 minutes of additional footage in the director's cut.
I've seen the director's cut.
What'd you think?
I think it won't really drastically alter anyone's opinion of it as an adaptation, but I do think it makes it a much better just movie overall.
Okay.
Like, so which one should I buy?
The director's cut.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
The best thing Snyder did was how he digitally replaced Malin Ackerman with a good actress.
She's now played by Meryl Streep.
But no, makes it a much better movie. It's just way better paced and fleshed out and less rushed. And yeah, so I recommend it.
Okay. Also coming out, The Lucy Show, Season 1 from 1962, starring Lucille Ball. Robot Chicken, Star Wars Episode 2, good stuff. Criterion release of Godard's Made in the USA and Two or Three Things I Know About Her, great movie. The Great Buck Howard with Emily Blunt, John Malkovich, Colin Hanks, and Tom Hanks, fun movie. And then the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, Off the Map.
There we go. All right. I think does anyone need to chime in on any of that at all?
Yeah, Mario.
No, I'm not gonna. I already took enough heat about not liking Star Trek, so I'm not gonna take any heat about liking Watchmen.
No, you won't take heat for liking Watchmen.
I liked Watchmen.
I thought it was a fun film. It was one of those movies where I went and much the same way that a lot of people talk about Star Trek, they went and they had a good time. That's what I felt about Watchmen. I went and saw that movie. I loved it. I had a good time, and I came out wanting more.
Cool. All right, well then, let's hit some news. Do you want to do our big passing, sir?
Sure. Walter Cronkite passed away, which is incredibly sad. This guy is one of the most well-known voices in the world. He's known as the man who Americans trust the most. His commentary on Man Walking on the Moon is probably one of the most iconic moments in all of American history. Truly be missed.
Yeah, really bummer of a timing. 40th anniversary of the moonwalk. So into the whole space race was just something that just fascinated that man. So it was a real shame that it had to happen. Always a shame that it has to happen at all. Real shame it happened now.
Yeah, truly.
Okay, well, there's really nowhere to go from there. So I'll let Chris, you can comment if you want, but we're talking about Star Trek DVD. It's coming out November 12th. apparently the Blu-ray version is getting significantly more extras from what I saw than the DVD, which kind of pisses me off because I'm not going Blu-ray anytime soon. So that makes me not
either.
So thrilled.
Me either. And I was looking. I'm actually was looking forward to this release because it was something where I thought, you know, given it a second viewing, maybe, you know, maybe it would change for me.
Yeah. Now the two discs does look impressive. Don't get me wrong, but there's one featured on the Blu-ray that's called the Shatner Conundrum, which I'm just dying curious to see what they're talking about with that because I'm curious to see what their thought process was about doing Shatner. So,
well, Dave, we can have a Screen Geeks meetup in Toronto, and you can go into the room at my mom's house, and we can go on my one bed and get my PS3 fired up and put that disc in and watch it together.
I'm
on your bed?
Do we get to make cookies, too? And get in our pajamas and paint our nails, please?
That's a given.
Okay, good. I'm there.
All right. Well, now that we've gotten the good joke, now we might as well let the pissed off out. Futurama is coming back, as we all know, to Cartoon Network. However, apparently, certain cast members will not be coming back as of right now, which is interesting because at Comic-Con this week, there's a Futurama panel with all the actors and apparently people from Fox as well. But they're looking to recast John DiMaggio as Bender, which is
I could do that. I could be the new voice of Bender.
Then you got Katie Sagal as Leela.
But hey, it's me, a Bender. That's the way it talks, right?
Exactly. Totally. Totally. The kicker of it all is that they're looking to replace Billy West, who does pretty much every other character on the show.
Hey, it's me, a Fry.
This is reminiscent to everyone that this is like what happened with The Simpsons. Who thinks that you can get away with this? Just because you don't see their face doesn't mean that you can go find some knockoff guy.
Well, is it
it's about money.
Oh. It wants $75,000 an episode.
Which, granted, how
voice
much...
voice actors, come on. I can't go with that. They need to take salary cuts like The Simpsons actors did.
But,
no big deal.
Well, now, to be fair, when they went to recast them, that was right before the Simpsons actors got their biggest payday of all time.
Right.
So, yeah. Oh, no. So, if Fox is kind of stuck with either saying we're going to pay them or don't bother doing the show, because I will not watch a show without those voice actors. They define the character.
It won't be the same.
If anything, they should replace a less important character, not the guy who plays all the characters on the show, or a majority of them. That's stupid.
Yeah, it means it's Professor Farnsworth, no Fry, no Zach Brannigan.
It's too noticeable.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they're talking about possibly replacing Maurice LaMarche as well.
It's like when they did Return of Jafar and Robin Williams, but then they make a third one and he decides to do that one. Like, what the hell?
Well, they paid him a lot of money for the third one. Yeah, a lot of money.
Wait, there's a third one?
Yeah, it's Aladdin 3, Aladdin and the King of Thieves, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
To be fair, is way better than the Return of Jafar.
Yeah, it's a lot better. Yeah.
Well, I'll have to brush up on that.
Because Return of Jafar smells like poo gas.
Let's talk about Futurama, though. Dave, do we really need Futurama to keep going, though? Honestly. Because, if The Simpsons, I'm a huge Simpsons junkie, but if they said this is the last season of The Simpsons, I'd be like, you know what? That's great. Time to wrap
Simpsons
it up.
Has do
you
been think so long?
Do you think Futurama needs to keep going though? Do you?
I'm torn because on one hand I want to say yes because I love Futurama. It's my favorite animated show. Period. Pretty much. At the same time, with the faltering quality of the Futurama movies, it makes me question it possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to even hear that it was coming back, because the what I've seen of the movies, they were just sort of eh.
Bender's big score is good. Beast with a Billion Backs is god awful. Bender's Game is fun, but it's two separate movies that make no sense, but they're still fun. And Into the Wild, Green Yonder kind of sucked too.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen the last two. And honestly, the best part of Bender's Big Score, I think the best part was probably in the first 10 minutes of the film when they were poking fun at the box company.
Yes. Well, and part of the problem was they were trying to serve two masters with this. They were trying to make a full-length feature and then make it airable as half-hour episodes. So, I don't know. We'll see. So, let's move on. What news have you got, Chris? Have you got anything at all?
I do have a couple things. I got one loose story here. ABC is going old school and to promote their show Castle with Nathan Fillion. Has anyone seen this?
Love Castle, yeah. Good show.
Yes. Yeah. Well, to promote the second season, they're actually going to publish a book that they're crediting to his character, Richard Castle.
Oh, neat.
They're going to publish a mystery novel and put that out to promote the season. So
that's cool. That's like when I was a kid, they released The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer when Twin Peaks was on. I love this kind of stuff. That's great.
And the only little bit I got is John Goodman is filming a pilot for a new Fox comedy show where he plays a CIA agent. It's a show will be called The Station, and it's being produced by Ben Stiller.
Oh, great.
That's some possibilities there.
That's great. I was afraid you were going to say he plays a single dad raising two kids with a wacky neighbor. You know, I thought it was going to be one of those. But no, that sounds promising.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I think his description is he's the CIA agent that's been there a while. And then, of course, the stars of the show will be like the new guys coming in or something. But So with Ben Stiller and John Goodman, I'd be willing to give it a shot. So
yeah.
We'll see.
Sounds good.
Yeah, well, that's really all I got.
Okay. Well, speaking of ABC, ABC Family is putting on a movie with Lindsay Lohan called Labor Pains. And the tagline is, all her career needs is a little bump, which I find pretty ironic considering I don't know what has happened to Lindsay Lohan.
Isn't bump also slang for like a hit of cocaine?
Yes, it is. It's about a thumbnail's worth of cocaine, I think.
Not that we do that.
No, but
interesting that you know.
Strange things you pick up in Monument, Colorado. But
should I read the line?
Yes.
Okay, so DVDTalk.com has actually reviewed this film, and I will just do the final sentence of the review, which says, the film is just a puddle of mediocrity from filmmakers who couldn't be bothered with putting some effort into their work, and a lead actress who's only trolling for a quick paycheck.
Trolling. That's mean.
Yeah. Okay. Is that all you had?
That's Lindsay.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Let's take a quick break so we can get into spend a little bit of time talking about Matinee, but yeah, we will be right back.
Farpoint Media.
Hey everyone, I'm Chris.
And I'm Cliff.
And we're Christians. And we've been made into a stereotype of people who just don't enjoy science fiction.
Well, they're just silly.
That's right, Clifford. Because here at The Jesus Geeks, we do mix theology, our love for Jesus, and also our love for everything geeky into a fun podcast.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes, it is, Clifford. And this amazing podcast can be found at www.thejesusgeeks.com. So remember, everyone, for the latest on entertainment, culture, and the geek lifestyle from a Christian point of view, tune into The Jesus Geeks.
We're the Christian missionaries to the geek culture.
Or we could be the geek missionaries to the Christian culture.
Ooh.
So remember, everyone, if you're a geek-loving Christian out there, check out The Jesus Geeks podcast at www.thejesusgeeks.com.
And we're back, and we're talking about Joe Dante's Matinee, the 1993 film that he directed. This film has an interesting history, and I want to talk about it very briefly. It was made for a very low-budget, for a low-budget studio. The studio in question, whose name is slipping my mind, shame on me, they went bankrupt. Universal picked this movie up from it being shelved indefinitely. So Joe Dante certainly was saved on this film, although the film ultimately did get released in the spring of 1993 to very little fanfare with a poster and an ad campaign that really didn't sell what a sweet and good-hearted movie it was. They made it look like it was something it really wasn't. And it ultimately flopped despite having fantastic reviews. Before I talk about the plot, I think it's worth noting that John Goodman, not long after Matinee opened, went on the record as to saying he was really sad that he feels that the two best movies he made back-to-back, The Babe, where he played Babe Ruth, and this film, he felt that these were the two best movies he made, and he didn't know what the heck happened, where they both flopped. But the plot of Matinee is it takes place during the summer of 1962. It's the Cuban Missile Crisis. A young man lives on this missile base, this this army base. And to will away his time during the summer, he goes to the movies frequently and meets this character named Lawrence Woolsey, played by John Goodman. The Goodman character is clearly meant to emulate or imitate or pay homage, however you want to look at it, to William Castle, the great B-movie director and filmmaker of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So if you've ever been curious about William Castle, or, you know, this is such a great primer for the films of William Castle and the style, which is to say that he made crappy movies with great gimmicks that suck people in.
If you can find it.
Yes, because a lot of his movies are very hard to find.
No, I meant Matinee.
Oh, Matinee in general. Yeah, Matinee is... Yeah, the DVD, last I heard, this morning, it was $70 on eBay.
Oh.
The DVD of Matinee. So hopefully, though...
Yeah,
I'm hoping,
so.
Yeah, hoping
Criterion
that we release this thing.
Pick that up.
That would be nice.
Huh.
Yeah. I love this movie. It is arguably the definitive Joe Dante film. It is a movie that pays tributes and homage to his loves, of course, old movies, old television, just the whole feeling of nostalgia and kids discovering themselves and coming into their own during their teenage years. It pays a wonderful tribute to B-movies and B-movie actors and B-movie directors. And I'll say this very briefly because I don't want to spend too much time taken away from all the stuff we can talk about. But like I was telling Dave the other day, this film makes me very nostalgic because when I was a boy, I had a friend by the name of Richard Denning. Richard Denning was the star of The Creature of the Black Lagoon, The Black Scorpion, Target Earth, The Day the World Ended. He's probably best known as being the governor of Hawaii in Hawaii Five-0, and he was the third wheel in An Affair to Remember. He was the one who Deborah Carr left the husband to be with Cary Grant. Anyway, Denning was an older guy at this point. It's probably a stretch to say we're friends. He was very, very sweet to me. I was this young kid. We went to the same church, and I would just kind of wide-eyed, smiling, follow him around while he would tell me these great stories about what it was like being a movie star. And it was very much like the relationship that the Simon Fenton character, this boy, has in the movie with the John Goodman character, basically just like in awe of this guy with all of his amazing stories and his amazing knowledge and the things that he got to do and see. There is something really wonderfully old school about this movie and its love for B-movies from the 50s. It's so easy to look at these films and just note how cheesy and embarrassing they are. But it's another thing to note just, you know, how they were really, you know, these wonderful cautionary tales and these modern-day parables for their time, and how those special effects, as corny as they were mind-blowing for audiences of that particular age. So this is a very special movie for me, and I think it was definitely a special film for Joe Dante.
Absolutely. What do you think of this, Chris? I know you're a big fan in the past, and you just revisited it recently.
Yeah. Also, I'm not going to come close to being able to follow after Barry there.
yeah, I'm used to that. It's a common occurrence.
This is a movie that I remember watching, you know, probably in the early days of VHS. It was probably one of the, you know, early ones to come out or whatever. But I remember watching it. I had it on VHS for the longest time. So it's one I look back fondly on, and then rewatching it again, you know, I still loved it. I'm a fan of the B movies. I love the bad special effects and the ridiculous plot lines, and I've always been a fan. So this movie just taps into that, just like Barry was saying. You don't have to have lived through the 50s and 60s to love those films. And so seeing this, and it's also really, it's the best explanation as to why we even like horror films is given by John Goodman's character in this. When he's talking to Gene Loomis, the Simon Fenton's character, Gene Loomis, and he's walking him through, talking about the first caveman, painting the mural on the wall and making it scarier so people react to it better. And it's just said that this is the same thing. And you know, the whole life of affirmation of watching a horror film and getting scared and then walking out into the daylight and everything's fine. It's just, I guess as close as you can get to, like, I don't know, I don't want to use the word poetry, but it's a really great explanation, I guess, of horror films in general.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And of course, it's arguably the definitive Joe Dante movie because not only, you know, because of its subject matter, but you've got Dick Miller and John Sayles in the movie playing the two guys who pretend to be picketing the Lawrence Woolsey movies up front. You've got all these wonderful actors. Kevin McCarthy and Kathy Moriarty in the movie within a movie, which is a film unto itself. Before I talk about Mance, I should say that I really wish this movie would come back as a midnight film or like back in theaters, because I got to see this film when it was in theaters, and there's something really special about how the movie kept switching back and forth between Mance and real life and the stuff that was happening in the audience as the audience was watching it. This movie is meant to be seen on the big screen.
Actually, the new Beverly in L.A. actually just they talked the studio into making a print of Matinee.
Oh, great, great.
So I can just hope that they. You know, I sent an email to I think it was Drew McQueenie over at HitFix. I was like, dude, you should see if you can get him into doing a new transfer for a new DVD. Because yeah, I love this movie too. I remember seeing this when I was like in junior high or high school, and it's just such a fun movie. Like as opposed to The Explorers, where you if you aren't a child of the 80s, you're pretty much going to be lost on actually like really enjoying and connecting with this film. This establishes that world of the 50s so well that you're sucked in, and it gives you the context. And you know what? I love Robert Picardo as the theater manager. He was just hilarious and awesome. And, you know, the bomb shelter was funny. I couldn't – it's like we have – you know, you have two kids locked in the bomb shelter thinking they're the last ones on Earth. Well, I guess we have to repopulate the population.
Yeah, did you ever – that was my only – I mean, if you really wanted to get nitpicky as far as like – I mean, I've said that I love the film and everything, but yeah, everyone in this film seems to be about 10 years older than what they are as far – yeah, everyone's a little bit more witty and a little bit more well and intelligent than you'd think they would be.
Sure, yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, you know, I've been saying that ever since I saw one episode of Dawson's Creek. I'm like, really? They're 17? They're talking about Nietzsche? But yeah. As far as Matinee, I appreciate you bringing up the kids because, like, it's so easy to overlook the kids in this movie. Kelly Martin, who we all know is Christy, unfortunately, and of course from Life Goes On, I mean, she is perfect as the dream girl in this movie. Omri Katz, who plays the best friend. He is, of course, the star of Erie, Indiana. Another Joe Dante production. And then Simon Fenton. It's worth noting how good Fenton is. Fenton is the star of the movie. He plays the main young man. Fenton's British.
Really?
British, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's another thing. Like, I see in the movie, like, oh my gosh, he's like the kid next door. It's so easy because there's so much cool stuff in this movie. It's so easy to like talk just about the John Goodman portion or the Cuban Missile Crisis. But yeah, the kids in this movie are great. You know what this movie reminds me of is The Wonder Years, one of my favorite TV shows. It has that kind of feel to it.
Yeah, very much. Thank you. There was like something I was trying to look for, and I was trying to think, you know, what is this like? Thank you. That's exactly what it reminds me of.
Well played, sir, yes. And apparently, if you can find this on Laserdisc, they actually have Mant as a special feature.
Cool. Oh, wow.
Very cool.
Oh, man.
Yeah, kind of makes me want to get that. You know, and the closing part of the film with the fire in the theater, I'm not going to spoil that. It's a testament and a tribute to movie magic. It really is, and I love that.
Yeah, it's such a great punchline, because it had me fooled, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll let Ethan and Josh and Melissa back in the conversation to wrap up our talk about Joe Dante, because there are other Joe Dante films.
Oh, yes. Yes. We have not talked about a certain film about the three rules. What are the three rules, Josh?
Don't get them wet. Don't put them in sunlight. Don't feed them after midnight.
That's right. All right? That's right. That's right.
Okay. Sweet Gremlins.
Yes. Yes. We have not talked about them because we figure those are the Joe Dante movies people have seen. And I mean, I think we've all alluded more than a few times that Gremlins 2 is arguably the most brilliant sequel ever made. Brilliant, brilliant film. I think Matinee has it all in terms of heart, but Gremlins in terms of being everything you'd want from a sequel and so much more, I don't think you could top Gremlins 2.
Yeah,
that's one I'm going to have to go back and revisit again. I don't even remember the last time that I saw it.
It's so good. Well, you saw those for the first time this year, both mm-hmm. of them.
Yeah, I know. I was robbed of my childhood.
You know, Gremlins 2 has a fake out in it that's a lot like something William Castle would do. You know, the thing with Hulk Hogan.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that's totally William Castle right there. Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. And are there any other Dante movies?
Ones? Small Soldiers.
Small Soldiers. Yeah. We got to talk about this. Is where Ethan chimes in. We got to talk about Small Soldiers.
Okay, I'm having so much of the merchandise.
Cool.
For like the toys, and there's like a video game.
Yeah.
It was like a fighting game.
Yeah, it was a cool video game.
And I remember I also owned it on VHS and lending it to a friend who was sick for a few days, and he said over the period he was sick and away from school, he watched it 5 times. So,
I think I saw it in theaters 4 times.
Wow.
That's impressive.
It was Kirsten Dunst, right? She was the girl, and wasn't it Omri Katz from Erie, Indiana? Wasn't he the guy or no?
No.
Am I wrong?
I think so.
Okay.
He kind of looks like
I him. Can't remember who the guy was all of a sudden.
And then the dad from Transformers was the dad in this.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Dunn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jay Moore was in it, and it was the last film that Phil Hartman ever did.
Oh, that's right.
David Cross was in it.
Who else?
David Cross.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and Tommy Lee Jones was the voice of the head. Does anyone remember the name of the head soldier?
Ah. Oh.
Yeah. Shit. I'm kind of upset I don't remember.
Because the special thing that this movie did was that the soldiers were reuniting of the cast of The Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
It was like Ernest Borgnine and I think Jim Brown, forgive me, I can't remember the name of all the Dirty Dozen, but it was the cast of The Dirty Dozen reunited doing the voices of the good soldiers. And the bad soldiers, the main bad soldier was voiced by Frank Langella.
What awesome. Was that Dante's last movie?
No, that came out in 97. The last film he's done thus far is the Looney Tunes film, Back in Action.
I was hoping we wouldn't be talking about that particular movie.
I think,
go ahead, Ethan.
I think he has a movie coming out that he's promoting at Comic-Con.
That's right, so. He is. Yeah, Thriller. Yeah, he said it's going to be a return to like The Howling. He wants to do like a straight-faced thriller.
I will say about Looney Tunes Back in Action, when they go full-on Looney Tunes mode, that movie is magic.
Yeah.
The rest of it sucks and never needs to be watched.
It's such a mixed bag. There's some stuff in the movie I like, and of course, he somehow finds a way to put Dick Miller into the movie, like for 5 seconds. But yeah, you know, I never thought I'd say this aloud, but I like Space Jam considerably better.
Whoa!
I know.
I did own the soundtrack to Space Jam, so
I like the Space Jam soundtrack.
Everyone owned the soundtrack to that.
Yes.
Back and forth, Archie became a child molester. Okay. All right. So is there anything else we want to say about Joe Dante? Joe Dante is a great director for if you want to get in touch with your inner child, I think.
Yeah, and he sees the world in a way that I wish I saw the world. You know, when I look at suburbia, like, for example, Dave, when I look around your neighborhood, I don't see the suburbia that he paints and explores in the burbs with the suburbia full of fantasy and possibility. I see, like, David Lynch's Blue Velvet. You know, I'm very cynical. I wish I saw the world that Joe Dante was, where cartoons and escape and possibility. He's kind of like, and you'll appreciate this, Dave, because I know you're not a fan of Mr. Spielberg. He's kind of like Spielberg with a crazier Looney Tunes edge. He's like Spielberg with a Warner Brothers Tiny Toon Chaser, you know?
That's so appropriate, and I love that.
That is good. Yeah. I like it.
Do we want to talk about the Twilight Zone segment?
Yeah, definitely talk about that.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. For those of listening who don't know, that Joe Dante did the third episode of the movie, Twilight Zone, the movie. The first episode is Joan Landis. Second is Steven Spielberg, the worst one by far, speaking of Mr. Spielberg. And the third one is done by Joe Dante, and it's...
creepy,
yeah.
And cool and weird.
That's another one. Like speaking of like what Ethan was saying about how like he watched Explorers and he like found this was the movie that he remembers from his youth. That Twilight Zone episode that Dante did, I find more people like, oh, that's the one about the kid who has the powers and puts his sister in a cartoon. It's like it's so creepy and surreal. And Dick Miller's in that. Kevin McCarthy's in that. It's got a real slant towards crazy cartoonism, but it's really creepy, really unsettling in its creepiness.
That was a great story in the original one.
That's right.
Boot. So he had some great material to work with. So.
Yeah, he really did. And I think it's funny. Like those two closing segments of Twilight Zone are really the best part of the whole movie. And I think they're the two episodes that are, you know, on par with the original episodes they're based on too.
Mm-hmm. We watched that in your film class around Halloween.
Yeah.
And I went to the grocery store afterward with my mom. And they played the Twilight Zone theme over the intercom. I thought I was going to shit my pants. I was so scared. She's like, we're freaking out. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Did you think you were going to see that little boy and he was going to like...
cartoons were going to pop out of the aisle. Not cool.
So this will wrap up our discussion of Joe Dante. His films are well worth checking out, even if they're not wholly successful. Next up, we are going to be tackling... one of the best filmmakers working today, I think, is quite easy to say. But we're going to be talking about David Fincher next.
Yay.
I believe we're going to be leading off with Seven. I'm not. We're still locking that down next week. And I think we have a guest maybe coming in to talk about that, too. So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I forgot what we're going to do. We're going to do...
Seven, Fight Club,
Panic Room. And Game.
That's right. And The Game, yes. So, yeah, that's going to be a very fun series. But before we do that, let's finish out this episode, because we still got plenty of material to go over. Let's talk about what's hitting the theaters this week.
The good, the bad, and the really ugly. Let's start with the really, really ugly. G-Force. As if Jerry Bruckheimer has not assaulted America enough this summer, G-Force is coming out. And he also did Confessions of a Shopaholic this year. What has happened to Jerry Bruckheimer?
I'm actually going to see that, I
G-Force
think.
G-Force looks like the stoner movie event of the year.
they keep putting like Nicolas Cage's name like top of the credits. I don't hear him at all in the trailer. I hear Penelope Cruz, Sam Rockwell. But where's Nick Cage? Like, who is he the voice of?
I think I read that he plays a mole with a rather nasally voice.
He doesn't play Fu Manchu.
About Penelope Cruz, I was also reading the plot description. I love it. Describes her as a sexy guinea pig.
Nice.
That's just wrong.
A sexy guinea pig. All right.
This is the Wonder Pets episode. No one will forget.
We'll get back to this, I'm sure. A film, Orphan, is coming out with Vera Farmiga and Paul Sarsgaard, Peter Sarsgaard, I believe.
I don't.
We
know
have
a twist ending to that.
That's coming out. The Ugly Truth, which has been pushed back a few times with Katherine Heigl and Gerard Butler.
Man, Gerard Depardieu is the new McConaughey.
Oh my God, no, Ethan! I said that last week,
and it was like a revelation to me.
Yeah. I mean, what happened? You, P.S. I love you. P.S. That movie is retarded, and he. Oh, and that was so bad. Sorry.
So nice to hear a female say that.
Yeah, Depardieu needs to do more action.
Yeah. Put Matthew.
I like that you renamed him to Depardieu.
Or the hero too.
Yes. I like that you've renamed him to Depardieu. I like that a lot.
Well, My Father the Hero 1 also had Katherine Heigl, so very good. That would make sense. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, full weird. Circle. Look at what I did there.
Why?
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Opening in limited release, you got a couple comedies. The Answer Man, starring Jeff Daniels and Lauren Graham of Bad Santa, of course. Not the Gilmore Girls. She was in Bad Santa, dang it. In the Loop, get this, guys. Comedy starring James Gandolfini, David Rash, Sledgehammer, woo-hoo! And in her first movie since like My Girl 2, Anna Chlumsky. Anna Chlumsky from My Girl. Isn't that amazing?
She hasn't done anything since then, has she?
No. She was in My Girl. She was in, I think, like Gold Diggers with Christina Ricci and My Girl 2. Yeah, she's been missing in action since the 90s. Isn't that something?
She's choosy.
Didn't he die? Like,
she's like Daniel Day-Lewis.
The first one. She's the female Daniel Day-Lewis. All right. And finally, in the limited release, Kevin Spacey and Robin Williams in Shrink.
Remember when Robin Williams was good?
Yeah, I do.
Man,
yeah.
I hate Robin Williams. Just getting that out there.
I think the last thing he did where I thought, you know, this is fantastic was 1 Hour Photo, which I really loved. Yeah. And everything since then, it's like his comedies have been worse than ever, and his dramas haven't been worth seeing.
He's got one coming out with John Travolta.
Yeah, Old Dogs. That looks really bad. You know what sucks is, like, I try to tell my students, you know, that this is the guy from The Fisher King and Good Morning Vietnam and, you know, and all these incredible films. But, like, most people who are young, you know, like in high school or film school, they know him from, like, RV, you know. They only know the crap he's done.
He's
not a funny guy anymore, too. Like, I saw him on Jay Leno, like, a year ago, and he was, like, just so obnoxious. He's like, man, I've got a vagina, and it shoots out.
His riffs just aren't funny. Like, you know, the riffing that he did used to be so clever. It used to be, like, a highlight of it. Like, you see him in Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, it's, like, it's a highlight. It's really funny. It adds to the movie. But now it's, like, he relies on that for so many of his films, and sometimes it doesn't even fit.
What was that film he did that he was, like, president or running for president?
It was Man of the Year, right? Yeah.
That wasn't too bad, but it wasn't great.
What's that?
So there's something to be said for cocaine.
Yeah.
Once again.
All right, let's go ahead and go to DVDs, because this is going down a bad, bad road.
All right. What do we got? Bart Got a Room. Who's in Bart Got a Room? People I don't know. Okay, moving on. sorry, blew that. Dollhouse, season one. This is Joss Whedon's Dollhouse, right? Is this show even on anymore?
Yeah, it got renewed.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, you've watched this, right?
I did, yeah.
I've heard, the only episode I saw was like the Britney Spears episode.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I've heard like after the first like 3 or 4 episodes, it starts really getting really good. Is that pretty much holding true?
I wouldn't use those words.
It gets better?
It stopped being really bad. Maybe it's not great. It was one of those things where it's just you got into it and you're like, well, I want to see what they do with it. I wasn't actually terribly pleased with how they ended the first season, so I was a little surprised that they even got a second season. So we'll see.
Britney Spears episode, is she in it?
No. It's that's just what everyone knows it as.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay. What else? Oh, a film that is certainly on Ethan's list as one of the worst of the year, if not of all time, Dragon Ball Evolution. A moment of silence for Dragon Ball Evolution.
Moving on.
Fast and Furious, the fourth entry, one of the first films of the year to make $150 million. I like this movie. A film that has one of the funniest scenes in any trailer this year. The movie is probably no good. Miss March. What else we got? Green Lantern, First Flight.
Woo-hoo!
Looks very cool. Torchwood, Children of Earth, also available on Blu-ray.
Which, have you seen this yet, Chris?
I have not seen it yet. I was going to say, I don't know, by the time this airs, it'll probably already have been gone and done, but BBC America starts it on July 20th for
yeah, so
a five-night run.
And it's good.
That's what I've heard.
So
I'm looking forward to it.
Roman Polanski's Repulsion is coming on Criterion. This is one of the scariest, creepiest movies ever made, certainly one of the creepiest films that Polanski did. This is the one where the arms come out of the hallway and try to grab her, and that's not even the scariest part of the movie. This is a creepy film with Catherine Deneuve. See it. It's great. Big Man Japan, the spoof of Japanese horror films about a very giant man who takes on some very giant monsters. You got to see this trailer. If you haven't seen it, you'll get sucked in. Sita Sings the Blues, the animated musical. Absolutely fantastic looking. Another one I can't even begin to describe. Just look at the trailer. It'll probably suck you in. Sita Sings the Blues. See this one. The original Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel getting you all revved up for the Nicolas Cage remake coming out.
What's with the cocaine everywhere?
It's our special Coke episode. Richard Pryor, Live and Smokin'. This is his 1971 concert. Yeah, what is with all of a sudden?
Yeah,
back with the drugs. Yeah, but this is actually a really great concert. I got to say, this is one of Pryor's best concerts. Battlestar Galactica, the complete series.
Yep.
Good stuff. Doctor Who, Planet of the Dead.
Which is also very good. It's some of the David Tennant stuff from this year. They're only doing like three or four specials or something. I don't know. Have you seen this one yet, Chris?
I did see that one, yeah.
It was pretty good.
I've reached the point where I'm ready to see a new doctor and a new writer.
Yeah, I can't wait for Stephen Moffat to take over. That's going to be amazing.
And then on Blu-ray, we got This Is Spinal Tap, the classic, 12 Monkeys, A River Runs Through It, and the entire Fast and Furious series. Seriously, folks, if you haven't seen them, watch the first one, watch the fourth one. Don't do too fast, too stupid, or the awful, awful Tokyo Drift. And finally, our crap title of the week. Boy, do I have a good one for you guys. Streets of Blood, starring Val Kilmer, Sharon Stone, Michael Bain, and 50 Cent.
How can that not be good?
And here's the kicker, guys. It takes place in New Orleans. Val Kilmer and Sharon Stone are supposed to have the worst New Orleans accents in the history of American cinema.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
Oh, that hurt. Okay, let's get through some mail here real quick that we have to get through. Did you want to – I'll let you start off, Ethan, since you weren't here to talk.
Hey, Dave?
Yes.
But you're just going under the mail, and obviously I don't have any mail. I got to get going.
Okay. Before you go, Jonja.net, what do you guys have coming up to pimp? Because we always got to give you the pimping chance.
Right now, well, keep in tune. I don't know when we're going to have it up, but we are going to be running a little bit of a contest to win the final season of Stargate Atlantis DVD set.
Cool. Right on.
So we'll have that coming up. Other than that... No, just keep checking back for this and that. You know, we try to keep stuff going on. But
and you guys cover mostly sci-fi, TV, and movies, right?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. We'll
cool.
throw in the horror and whatnot, too, but yeah.
Right on. Cool. Well, and we'll keep an eye out for interviews because you never know when you're going to get a good one. It's always
fun.
Yeah,
hopefully sometime soon we'll actually have our interview with the director of Orphan since that's coming up. So
cool.
That should be up soon.
Right on, sir. Sweet. Well, thank you for joining us much.
Hey, thanks for letting me sit in.
So, Ethan, did you want to chime in real quick about emails?
Okay, I got an email kind of directed towards me, more directed towards Chris Stipp, but discussing insulting the audience of Transformers 2 and people who like it. Well, I'll just say this first. When I recorded that episode, I was in a bit of an emotional state.
Just a bit.
I've kind of gone off the deep end recently, so just saying that. But, you know, the thing about Transformers 2, you know that scene in There Will Be Blood where Daniel Plainview was like, I look at people and I see nothing worse like it. Well, I look at Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. I see nothing worth liking. I see nothing about this movie that's enjoyable in any form. It's not that I think necessarily people who like it are stupid. I just don't understand why they like it. That's all.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We did get a follow-up email. Not from Chris. That was just the best Daniel Day-Lewis ever. All right. This is from Big Orange Michael. I know he listens a lot over to Geek Radio Daily as well, but it says, hello there, Screen Geeks. Listening to your last couple of episodes, I wanted to thank you for the humorous take on Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. I was definitely drugged to this film kicking and screaming by a group of friends because it was the choice of the person whose birthday we were celebrating. Had it been up to me, I'd have left it for DVD or cable as I didn't care much for the first one. Anyway, it was nice to hear you guys offering your insight and critique of the film. As I was listening to your past couple of episodes, a thought struck me, especially after hearing Chris's email response about the insinuations made about the audience. Following the movie, I found myself wishing that Transformers 2 was the type of blockbuster that Dark Knight or Iron Man were last summer, or even that a Star Trek was to some extent this year. Namely, that there were blockbusters that had some substance along with the style. Yes, Transformers 2 gave us pretty much what we expected, but couldn't they have challenged themselves to be something more? We've seen it work with second films in the past, Spider-Man 2, Dark Knight, and others, where you establish a universe, the second one is about expanding, exploring, and adding depth to that universe. Instead of doing that, we got lowest common denominator jokes and lots of stuff blowing up. Which is all good, I guess, but when you've seen that, there can be quality films that appeal to a mass audience, it makes me a bit sad. I guess having seen what can be, it's hard to get behind a film that is so financially successful like this one, but ends up being as hollow as a chocolate Easter bunny. Thanks for the show, and keep up the good work, Big Orange Michael. Thank you much for that, sir.
Yeah, a hollow chocolate Easter bunny that's like a year old. Yes, I completely agree.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, if you would like to shoot us an email, you can. You can have your emails read on our show. You can email us at Dave, Barry, Ethan, Josh, Melissa, or podcast, all at screengeeks.com. Or if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do that as well. You can give us a call at 719-553-5664. And I guess we'll just wrap this bad boy up. So until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Josh.
Ethan.
And Melissa.
See you.